Oh my God. Sorry, guys. Welcome back to Freedom of Joy Show. I was actually eating a little bit of a really great turkey sandwich. So I apologize, but hey, let me see. It's really good turkey with, you know, the kind that you get at Vons and stuff and whatever. But I'm going to move on with the show here a little bit. Welcome back to the Freedom of Joy Show here on American Freedom Radio. And I actually am going to bring up my guest right now, which I'm very excited to have him here. You probably heard him here. He's been on the Chuck O'Chelly show. I think it's as much as early as last night. And he's been he is a author, a philosopher, activist, and a podcaster himself. I'd like to introduce Daniel Lewis Crumpton to the Freedom of Joy show here. Thank you for being here for the first time.
Thank you
on the show.
Also, fully functional upper sociopath, not a lower sociopath. There is a difference. So there's that.
Oh, really? I'm curious about that. Can you like describe? Can you give me a little bit of essence of what a lower one is, and then an upper one, and the difference? I mean, what?
Yeah, sure. And this is a Crumptonism. So I'm sure you're not going to find this in any psychology book. A lower functioning sociopath does not really feel true emotions. They just mimic them. A higher functioning sociopath can shut them off and on like a switch. Kind of like Spock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
You know what? I can see that. You know, I've often wondered, like, there was an article that came out recently, not recently, but maybe a few years ago, and they were saying that comedians were I guess, like, possibly sociopaths, or some of them were seemed to be sociopaths for whatever reason. I guess, like, their viewpoints or their ability, like, not to, like, really care. I don't know. There's doctors that they say that, in order to not feel empathy or being able to, like feel the pain of slicing, you know what I'm saying? They're able to dissociate. Is kind of considered sociopathic behavior, really,
It's kind of funny because here recently I've been actually asked to start doing stand-up comedy. I've never done that before, but some people tell me I'm funny. So, I guess you got to be a little crazy and unhinged. I know that. I've always heard that like professional stand-up comedians are some of the most depressed people you'll ever meet, and I don't know if that's true or not. But me and Chuck, we were having a long philosophical discussion one time about where comedy comes from, and he kind of looked at me. He said something very profound. He's a profound guy. He said, "If you really think about it, the funniest comedy comes from the greatest suffering and tragedy in the world. It's our ability to you got to do something with it." And laughing about it is probably the best way to transmute that type of energy that you can think of. So I think you had a real good point right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can go with the theory that, some comedians are the most depressed people in the world or tragic. But, I don't think all of them are, but I think most of them had some really, some sort of pain somewhere. Or an insight, they're able to have, they have a certain mind, there's a certain insight, and they're, you are working with, flipping the other side of things that are often very tragic, or at the same time, an idealist, it's like, okay, being able to see, like, for example, like George Carlin said, the world is like a circus, and some of us were given notebooks and got to sit up front and take notes, basically, and there's that perspective, too, where you can see what doesn't fit and then the humor out of that. And I think that there's also a comedian or any artist, any person that speaks out there is really trying to is kind of like a philosopher. Like even a comedian can be a philosopher or teller of the truth, or there's the healing aspect of it, because the one thing that they say that the cabal or maybe the people that don't have any feeling or are the dark sociopaths or the lower sociopaths, some of them can't understand humor. They don't understand that that ability to flip it and still have joy and a laughter. There's a power in laughing. There's a power of making a joke out of something, because the topic at that point doesn't have emotional psychological power over you anymore. And, you know, and really, if you look at it from, like, the beginning of time, even, like, in the art, you know, you go back to, you know, the theatrical days or whatever. You can go back to, you know, Aristotle in the very first plays ever really written. There was the satirist and the person who, and then you realize that they're the ones who can joke with the king. They can usually, without being killed, I'm sure some of them got killed, but, you know, unless you don't go too far. But there's this thing where you're able to get away with saying things under the mask of that or using that ability than some people who don't do it can do and still, and the people laugh at it. And then once people laugh, if they get a joke, it means that there's enough universal understanding for that group of people to get the irony of it. And, you know, then you're dealing with, you know, metaphors and almost a code of reality than actually really simply totally stating it. Sometimes you can get away with hinting at it. And I think that that's kind of like what it could do. Now, I want to move into cannabis because cannabis, you know, some people like to combine cannabis with laughter healing. I know that there's like some shows that done in that vein. I'm sure, like, actually 420 is coming. I'm actually performing on a 420 show here in Los Angeles, and there's a combination of music and art with that as well. You're involved with, with Canisense, and can you like describe what that organization is, and all about it?
No, mic drop. No, just joking. primarily I'm an author. Everybody on American Freedom Radio, they know what I'm into. I'm an author, podcaster, stuff like that. But I'm also an activist, and cannabis is real, real important to me. And anybody out there who does use cannabis. I don't have to convince anybody. Everybody knows it's not a drug. It's not harmful to anybody. Nobody's ever died from it. It's a healing plant that was given to us by a loving creator who wants us to live the best possible lives that we can live. And unfortunately, because of the world that we do live in, there's a lot of people who are, you know, either traumatized with PTSD, anxiety, depression, bipolar, all kinds of things like that. Or, you know, they're fighting things like cancer, autism, things like that. And, you know, you see every single day, you were talking about social media earlier, you can't even get on any social media without seeing 10, 20 articles every 15 minutes about some new study about the benefits, the health benefits of cannabis. I mean, we even come equipped with a cannabis endocrine system in our bodies. Every spiritual document that I've ever read speaks very highly of cannabis and commands almost the use or the partaking of cannabis, and that includes the Bible, all you Southern Baptists. It does. I mean, because it's a healing plant. And so we were talking during the break, I live in Georgia. I live in a state that is not friendly to cannabis users at all. And they have a vested interest in taking people who use this plant as a medicine or for spiritual purposes and throwing them in, you know, privately owned prison systems, companies, cages, because they reap a profit from taxpayers here. You know, we have a facility down the road that charges the county $75 a day per head for everyone that's there, okay? And it costs them $5 a day to feed, clothe, and shelter them. Now, this is a privately owned company. Somebody's making a lot of money to lock people up for victimless, quote, crimes like cannabis use. And it's a huge part of it. So having that environment around me and being a person who is a recovered alcoholic and somebody who is recovering from post-traumatic stress disorder, I know the benefits of cannabis. I know what it has helped me to do and what it's helped me to become. I got a mother that's a two-time cancer survivor, and she's has COPD, and I know what cannabis does for her. I lost my father in 2011, not from Big Pharma, but from over-the-counter pain relievers, as a matter of fact. And it shocked me into this realization that what kind of a world or state, to be more isolated to myself, do I live in where he could go to the store and get something over-the-counter or get a prescription for legal cocaine to alleviate pain with no side effects except, I don't know, maybe consuming, you know, some potato chips or something, he'd get locked up for a plant. Made no sense to me. And so I'm also an ordained minister, I've always used cannabis under my First Amendment. Just, you know, it's part of my spiritual belief, so I'm protected. But it's hard to get other activists out there who aren't spiritually minded to wrap their head around how you can use the First Amendment. So I was contacted by some other activists in the state of Georgia who, you know, are with Peachtree Normal and have been up on Capitol Hill trying to get a decriminalization for cannabis here in Georgia. They contacted me about a new company called CannaSense. And this is it's a relatively new company. It's about 20 months old. And essentially what they've been cannabis activists for about 20 plus or 30 plus years. These guys, the founders come from the Ron Paul movement, the Liberty movement. So that'll give your listeners an idea of who it is behind this company. And basically they've streamlined a legal framework for anybody in any of the 50 states to become a medical cannabis patient. And that comes with a medical cannabis patient ID card that you can carry in your wallet. It's like a license. It also comes with a doctor's recommendation for cannabis use, because doctors can't prescribe cannabis. It's not FDA approved or a controlled substance. So you get a recommendation. Make sense?
Yeah, I know. I'm aware of that. I know that it's not a prescription and that it is a recommendation. Yes.
Okay. So basically the three pieces of legislation is real simple. Is one, you got Article 4 of the Constitution, the Reciprocity Act. Anybody can Google that. Essentially, states have to adhere and respect and honor the judicial rulings and proceedings of other states, even if your state's laws are different, right? Of course, the second piece of legislation is the Compassionate Use Act of 1996, and I think you're in California, right?
Yes, I am.
All right, so you guys know what that is, okay?
Yes, absolutely. I know what that is.
So
yeah.
The linchpin that puts this framework together, if you want to take these three pieces of legislation like a pyramid and use their symbology against them, the third piece was when Obamacare came out. Think what you will about Obamacare. I'm not a huge fan. Don't really care. But I work with what I can get. And what we got with Obamacare is telemedicine. And so even if Obamacare is repealed or replaced or whatever, they're not going to take telemedicine away. It's not going to go anywhere. It's there. It's already there. It's useful, it's practical, it's going to stay. So,
all right, wait a second. Can I back up here? What is telemed, actually? I'm not familiar with that term.
Telemedicine is, I'll tell you the process I went through here. I live in Georgia. I reside in Georgia. Through the CannaSense program, I was able to contact doctors in California that see patients for medical cannabis, okay? I didn't have to get in a car and drive to California. I didn't have to get on an airplane and fly to California. Because of Obamacare, I actually scheduled my appointment via the internet. And it's like Skype. If you have a camera and a mic, anybody can do this. So I had a virtual doctor's appointment in California. And because a California doctor had that appointment with me and evaluated me and recommended cannabis for me, I am legally, in all 50 states, a California patient. And so every state...
Okay, wait a second. This is under the Obamacare? Is this under Obamacare? Is telemedicine?
It was introduced, yeah.
Okay, I have to question you on this because, I know that states... I mean, when you talk about a medical marijuana card that you get in the state issues, and California has a state-issued actual hard medical marijuana card. Some people think that that's more that gives you more protection than, when a police officer comes with you because, it's acknowledged by the state of California. It's got all that stuff going for it. I do understand, the medical marijuana recommendations that allows you to smoke marijuana legally. I do have to bring up, though, that there are certain the states. I mean, when you're talking about telemedicine, and I understand, what you're saying, and there's a doctrine, blah blah blah. But to my understanding, and I've seen this in different states too as well. There's a definite difference between one state and another state, and another state actually recognizing another state's marijuana laws. And I'm not really sure in the total legality of what you're talking about in the sense. I mean, I don't mean to. I can see where in theory what you're talking about and how it would work. Just like a lot of times they talk about, like, I have the right to use cannabis for spiritual purposes underneath all, you know, like the same as mushrooms or peyote, according to my religion. And that's been practiced in California. They've had actual dispensaries that were legally opened under medical marijuana, and they also had that belief too, but they were legalized in any way according to state rules. And they still were attacked. They were still raided. And some of these guys in California got targeted the hardest on that. So the even, and I understand, like, you know, when you're working in a state that's not recognizing any laws, or there, or it's a really hard thing, I know from experience and from past history and stories that a lot of people have given those guidelines, and yet if the federal government wants to come after you, they can. I mean, the federal government can still come after any one of the states, even though we've actually technically legalized it, because it, under the federal government, it's not recognized. And I can say right now that the raid that I was in at the medical marijuana dispensary in North Hollywood was raided underneath those laws, even though they had actually done every single byline that they could in the state of California. Right now, those medical marijuana dispensaries are getting more protected, and then also with, you know, the individual ultimate legalization in every state. But, you know, I don't think California right now actually is recognizing other people's medical marijuana recommendations. I know that Nevada did. When I was over in Nevada, they recognized my California ID. But there's a real, I mean, I have to look into all of that, but the states themselves are still kind of, it's really being conquered state by state. And I think in terms of like total protection, I don't think there's total protection underneath every guideline. We can quote things, but the federal government still trumps that. I mean, what do you know in response to what I'm saying?
Let's be practical. There is no security for anything. I mean, you're talking to a guy who was arrested and put in a cage for 3 days and three nights for walking his dog in a public park 10 minutes after a city ordinance curfew. Okay? Police, I mean, no amount of medical ID cards or medical laws or anything are gonna prevent an ignorant police officer or law enforcement officer from bashing you in the head or putting you in a cage or killing you. Okay? You know, you can pass all the laws you want to or find any kind of loopholes. If you come across a totalitarian, you know, Nazi-type cop, they don't teach them the law anyway. You know, look, they don't teach lawyers the law. When, you know, for that specific case where I was arrested for being in a park, I demanded a jury trial for that. And the judge and the attorneys had to take a recess because they did not know if I had an actual right to a jury trial. When it's in the Constitution that any controversy over $20, you're guaranteed a right to trial by jury. And they said they've never seen that. I'm talking about a lawyer who passed the bar, not that that's much, and a judge that are telling me they have never seen that before. They never saw the Bill of Rights before. So, no, the federal government is they're going to do whatever they want to do, okay? So what I say is bring your perspective to the 9th and the 10th Amendment of the state nullification, and if that doesn't work, personal nullification. It's all of our responsibility to know our rights, to be educated and informed, and be able to communicate them in a way that is not going to be confrontational.
Well, but the 9th and the 10th Amendment has not been totally foolproof on that. And, you know, one of the things is that there's the broad interpretation of it, and then the smaller one, which is more restrictive. And also, what you're still looking at, we're still not able to transport it over state lines technically, and you know that's the whole thing that happened with, you know, if you look at like what happened to Tommy Chong, that was even just doing paraphernalia over state lines. And so there's, you know, and then there's the Roche, what was it? I mean, there's the Angel Roche, thing, and that was lost. And I think they were actually trying to work with the 10th Amendment on that. And it's still in many ways been shot down. There isn't really a precedent, you know, a case yet that set precedents on this yet. Mm-hmm. And yet I know that what you're, it should be in theory of what you're quoting should be substantial. I even say, you know, you can even go to the Declaration of Independence. I mean, making cannabis illegal is a violation to the Declaration of Independence because, you know, we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Happiness meaning property. There's anything that we should be allowed to grow anything that, you know, not having that right taken away is if it was to damage our society and the people around us. And where can you determine that cannabis actually really does that and should be taken out of the hands of the people, being that it's such a vital source to really the survival of this planet? So even making in that theory, I think it should be recognized. But, you know, when you point these things out to it, it just seems like these guys decide that they can interpret any law that they want to in order to slap our hands. Maybe they're going to open it up, you know, and I would think theoretically maybe it would be possible.
Well, I'll tell you my personal experience with CannaSense, if that's okay.
Okay.
All right. This is my personal experience. When I was approached by representatives or caregivers to be sponsored in, I scheduled my appointment with CannaSense or with Presto Doctor. I saw my doctor the next day via telemedicine. He evaluated me and he recommended me for cannabis use. I received my medical card and my recommendation in an email and the hard copy the next day. After that, I joined the CannaSense Collective, which allows me a legal defense team in the event that anything were to happen to infringe upon my rights in the cannabis use. So whenever you join the CannaSense Collective, you have a legal defense team. Now, the company's been out just a little over 20 months, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. People are joining every day. I can't tell you how many radio shows I was booked for to talk about it before I came on. And there hasn't been a single instance of any arrest or any legal push from any state on any member of CannaSense. And if that does happen, then you have a legal defense team that's going to come, you know, and defend you in court and probably make you very wealthy. Really, in Georgia, like specifically in Georgia, there is no judge that wants this legal defense in their courtroom because it had set a precedent. And like I said, you know, you can look for it yourself. If you go to my website, downloadedcontent.com, and click on the CannaSense Total Wellness link, there's all the details where you can, you know, look these laws up yourself and see how it works. Now, I'll tell you, my personal situation is I'm on probation, and I was worried about how this is. I have to report to the state every month. You know what I mean? So this was something that I was concerned about. Is this real? Is this going to hold up? And so, you know, I went in and I talked to my probation officer and, I said, listen, you know, I talked to a doctor and, you know, for my well-being, and this is what they recommended. And I gave my probation officer my medical card and my recommendation and she lit up. Now, I'm just telling you what happened to me personally, the way that I asserted the information to her. She lit up. She said, yeah, you know, but in the event that there is like a screening, you will show up for THC, but I'm very proud of you, very happy for you. Let me go ahead and put this in the file. And so she did, and then she came back, and we discussed the CannaSense program more, and she actually asked if it would be possible for me to sponsor her into it. So that's what happened to me, okay? And that's me reporting to a state employee or whatever. And that's because, you know, I can communicate pretty well. And make this sound normal to anybody because it should be normal. It is normal. Now, if you're out on the basketball court and a cop comes up to you and you like take your medical card out and toss it and hit him in the nose, don't expect the same type of reaction from the state. You know what I mean? It's the way that you own your own sovereignty. The law, legality, all that stuff is a magic show anyway. You know, there's no difference between an attorney and a good writer. It's who can tell the best story with statutes and acts. I mean, the Bill of Rights is 10 amendments. If you go to your state legislatures and you look up statutory laws and acts, you got volumes and volumes and volumes. You don't think there's a tons of loopholes. It's just theater. Court is theater. The law is theater. But you never win with the police anyway, because they rush them through police academy. They don't know what your rights are. They know how to type into a computer, I saw this person jaywalking, what's the statute or act. They don't know the law. They're recruiting these kids very, very young. And, you know, the ones who are coming back with PTSD and stuff from overseas, they're putting in there. you're not going to win with a police officer, you know, a good percentage of the time anyway. You're going to win in court. And so what Canisense does is, one, it allows you an affirmative legal defense. And in the event that you come across some type of Nazi fascist type person with the state, Canisense is going to supply you with a legal defense team. I mean, so you have several legal protections with Canisense, whereas 20 months ago, you didn't have this out there. As far as shipping across state lines, with Canisense, you actually get access to their apothecary. And when you order your medicine, it actually ships to you. In any state, they actually ship all around the world.
Okay, I'm gonna have to I gotta say something there on that. And again, what you're quoting is, you know, it's in theory, yes, I can see where, you know, it's a defense and it's a belief and it's what you think. But I have to say that, you know, even with the current laws that have been voted on in a state, is still being obstructed from really happening. And really, you know, you have to be very careful. Legally, on a federal level, you are not allowed to transport cannabis against state lines. I mean, yes, you might have a legal defense team that can defend you, and they're in place to back you. But that's just like, you know, having Bruce Margolin here in, you know, Los Angeles. I mean, there's so many defenses that happen with people who have had medical marijuana dispensaries open and practicing, or people that have been growing and penalized for the amount of plants they have, and all kinds of situations. You know, I knew a girl that was transporting cannabis over state lines in a car that she didn't know had cannabis in it and was traveling. And her friend got arrested, and she went to jail too, and was a big battle to get out, and they have to do time. You're not allowed to ship it across state lines still. And you could say, well, yeah, here's your certificate, here's your medical doctor, here's this, but I really can't see where you're not going to have some sort of, that somebody is going to get popped at some point, and they're going to come after them. Because, you know, especially when you're, you know, having a source and then shipping them over state lines, and especially in a state that is, you know, has zero tolerance. I mean, Arizona, you know, no tolerance. One of the things that happened to Ronnie Smith, Roland A. Doobie, was that he was going over state lines and he was a medical marijuana patient, had the cannabis in his, I think, in his trunk, but they still arrested him and took him to jail, and he was there for a very long time, and then they were trying to extradite him on other charges, and it went on. So I know several people that got popped in Utah with cannabis. And your medical marijuana card or your card or nothing means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, I know in downtown Macon here in Georgia, it's still illegal to beat your wife with anything thicker than your thumb or spit on the sidewalk on Sundays. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you can't compare these laws to that. I mean, those are laws that, like, sodomy, you know, it's like, really, you know, are you gonna put somebody in jail for homosexuality? You know, or whatever. I mean, those, they're definitely, but cannabis is not considered one of those. This is like huge, this is big business. And there's going to be state regulations, and there's going to be government regulations, and there's a desire to who's going to control it and not control it. And the spiritual purposes stuff does not hold up in water in every state, not even in the state of California yet.
No, I mean, like I said, the legal system it's magic. It's theater. If you look at these guys in Oregon, like with the Bundy thing, you have the first round of defendants. They all get acquitted. So you would think that the federal government would drop the charges on the second guys, but they didn't. They doubled down, and, you know, they get some convictions. Now, how does that work? How does it work that with a jury of 12 a certain 12 individuals, a group of guys who took over a wildlife refuge get acquitted? You know, no laws have changed between the first round of trials and the second round of trials, but those guys get
I wouldn't really base the Bundy case on cannabis laws.
Well,
I think the Bundy case had a lot more going on with it that's behind the scenes in terms of the outcome of what happened there than, we can go into that if you want to, but I seriously don't think that, you know, that the Brio land management situation is completely different than cannabis. And when you're talking about, you know, lands that are owned by the federal government, I mean, I'm going to say point blank right now. I mean, I got busted on an Indian reservation for smoking marijuana in my hotel room. at a casino, and I was basically told that it was owned by the federal government, and I could have been taken in on that. And I had two medical marijuana. I had a medical marijuana recommendation. I knew Oregon, acknowledged California recommendations. And according to the federal police, on an Indian reservation, I had violated the law. And if they wanted to, they could have taken me to jail. Seriously. They were at my door ready and ready to get me. So, and I know people that have done, the dispensaries in California with the laws of it's for spiritual purposes. And they seen Craig X. Rubin, who had a Temple 420, hit hard on this. Hard.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's already seen its casualties.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and I wasn't talking about. I was using the Bundy and the Oregon situation, not for their specific situation, but the idea of law and how we perceive law, how law approaches us, how government approaches us, and how we approach government. That's why I was using that analogy. There are more laws than you could possibly count that are still on the books. But what it comes down to when I say the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment specifically, is that that individual sovereignty can nullify. Well, there's something that
not
comes,
really. It never has.
Well, Terry,
we lost that with the Angel Reich case.
Let me finish. Concept that our founding fathers gave us of personal nullification, I suppose in order to really use it, an individual must have courage. I forget who said it, the Constitution is just a piece of paper. You're not going to be able to hold the Constitution up against anything or anybody.
Are you serious? I mean, come on. I mean, really, I mean, what do we I mean, right now, I mean, there's still cases right now in fighting for what the Constitution is, even including our free speech rights. I think the Constitution is the most powerful binding contract that we still have in place. It's the interpretation of what that is that has been, marginalized, and it's the forces that are out there that are constantly challenging the rights and the perceptions that the media are making on what the Constitution is. But right now it's like the Constitution is the very document that makes people that made people come from all over the world that wanted to be under based on certain sovereignty, which again, unfortunately, is not necessarily recognized in its totality yet.
Yeah.
And You're looking at a plant that it's not just about medicine or smoking it or whatever. You're looking at a plant that is challenging to practically every single industry that the powers that be have their hands in, the bloodlines that are controlling the entire system that we're in, the Rockefellers and the DuPonts and the plastic and the paper people and the oil and the pharmaceutical companies. That's the big nugget of control there, and they do not want people to be mixing up cannabis oil that's going to be curing cancer going across state lines if they avoid it. If Tommy Chong has to do time for shipping a bong, what makes you think it's going to be legal to put THC over all the different states based on a recommendation from a doctor in the state that's approving it? I have to really question that, because the only thing that actually can be transferred or is actually legally able to be transferred is only CBD, because it's the THC, the psychoactive factor, that's the part that is not allowed to be exchanged over state lines.
Well, before I kind of address that, let me make sure I quantify what I said earlier, which was the Constitution is just a piece of paper. I firmly believe in the Bill of Rights. I believe it's a spiritual document. It's based off the trial of Yeshua. So I value the right.
Yeah, but you don't think the Constitution wasn't a spiritual document either? How can you say that the Bill of Rights is more spiritual than the Constitution is? I mean, it all fits together, right? Doesn't it?
Well, what I'm talking about is the physical. I have pocket constitutions within like 5 feet of me. Okay, But the actual physical constitution is just a piece of paper. If I never read it, it's powerless. If I read it and don't ever assert those rights, it's powerless. If I read it, never assert those rights and put it like under a bushel so nobody else can hear the rights, it's just a piece of paper. The rights that the piece of paper talk about are embodied within each and every individual. It's our individual responsibility to know those rights, embody those rights, assert those rights, and try to get others to do the same. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying. I value the Constitution a lot, okay? But I'm saying at the end of the day, if you have a pocket constitution, a lot of my friends carry pocket constitutions, I do too. But if you don't believe what that document says.
Okay, you know, what you're saying is like absolute to me. I'm like, what? I mean, seriously. I mean, like the Constitution is the document that basically sets up the laws of how the United States is going to function. Okay, and to say that it's just a piece of paper that people can choose to abide by or not abide by, you know, I mean, their cases have gone to the, you know, free speech cases have gone all the way to the Supreme Court to fight, like, what's going on. The gun control laws are part of, like, our the Second Amendment. And if you don't think that there isn't a battle or a fight of people trying to preserve those rights or they're not the law of the land, if you choose to, I mean, you know, yeah, we can sit back and say, oh, like, we can be straw man if we want to. All right. But let me tell you something. Sean David Morton still went to jail and did the straw man defense. Now, you may say he's a corrupt bastard and he cheated the IRS, but when it really comes down to it, and they pointed it out how it wasn't going to work. So, you know, there are things there. We live in the United States. You know, the Constitution is extremely important. And I don't think it's like, oh, yeah, you can just choose to live by or not live by it, because when it really comes down to it, the fight is going to come up to the Constitution to decide. You know, whatever's on the federal, it's a class one drug still. You know, there are, you know, it's the United States. It's states that are governed by themselves to choose what they want. Even alcohol in its day has its laws. Each state has its own laws of alcohol. You know, there are things that have people have already been busted and there have already been court cases that have been lost on this. So no matter what you're doing, you can say, you know, whatever theory you're based on, but if you think that, you know, that you can take the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence and separate it from the Bill of Rights, I totally disagree with you, and I just don't think it's a piece of paper that people can choose to believe in or not. Yeah, anybody can choose to believe anything, but when you stand in front of a judge, and if you're going to fight for your human rights underneath the Constitution, if that matters to you, which it does to a lot of people. Like, people are going to look at this in a very, it's not just a piece of paper. And by the way, it was written on hemp paper.
Right. We're not disagreeing. I think we're saying the same thing in different ways.
I don't think so. I don't think I'm saying the same thing you are.
Do you appreciate the Constitution?
I believe that. Yes, definitely. I defend the Constitution.
Me too.
Right.
We agree.
But you're saying it's just a piece of paper that nobody really, you know, you can choose to practice or not practice, so it doesn't really have any validity here in the United States. Am I wrong?
I think you're mishearing what I'm saying.
Okay, go ahead.
You know the Constitution, and you know your rights, and you fight for your rights, and you believe in your rights. But my question is, aren't there people out there by the droves who are ignorant of their rights and don't? They don't
yeah, but you know,
right.
But they're not the right. ones who are like sitting here on a talk show, you know, talking about and discussing the laws or involved with the politics of what's going on. And we are the educators of the information of the people so that they can get an understanding of it.
Well, let me ask you a question. According to the Constitution, do you and I have a right to partake of cannabis?
Theoretically, yes. Okay, if you were to, like, uphold what that Constitution is, but right now it is not legally being recognized, and there is other laws in place by the federal government that have made it illegal.
But if
we had a good lawyer, you could question that in its very validity, and this is the question that should be. But right now there is no – like, what you're saying is, like, a theory that you are actually putting people at risk – to be going to jail for, and hopefully Canisense is going to have a good enough, strong enough team to actually change history here about the cannabis plant.
Well, my question would be, according to the Constitution, do we have a right to partake of cannabis?
There is nothing written in the Constitution that says specifically that we have the right to consume cannabis in its written law specifically, because if it did, we probably would have, they wouldn't be able to legislate it the way it would. Either that or something grossly wrong has been doing it. If you can say, I can say, well, underneath, you know, the Declaration of Independence, in theory, what I just mentioned, yes, it is a crime against our own government to make it, like our own judicial system, to actually make it illegal based on, if you were even to take literally to interpret the Declaration of Independence, okay, which is part of the Constitution.
All right, so
yeah, it is not, it should be not, but that has not been argued in court yet, and I'm telling you that there are people that are already in prison for the very things that we're discussing right now in states where medical marijuana and marijuana is legal at the present moment. That's what I'm saying.
The Supreme Court's ruled, that's never been overturned, that that if any state legislature, because the supreme law of the land is the Constitution, and the Constitution says anything we didn't mention in this, you can do that too, essentially. The Constitution restricts government, not the people. And so you're right, there is no cannabis mentioned in the Constitution, and it's to be interpreted by us to mean that we're allowed to do it. We're just not allowed to infringe on other people's rights. Now, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Now, the Supreme Court has ruled, and it's never been overturned. I could go get my Shepherd citations, you know, if you want me to. But the Supreme Court said that an unconstitutional law, okay, which is any law that's written by a state legislature, anything underneath the Constitution, because the supreme law of the land is the supreme law. Everything else is inferior. That if a state legislature comes along and issues a license or a fee or writes anything that contradicts the supreme law of the land, it does not have to be argued in open court of law. That is null and void before the ink dries on the paper. It acts as a nullity of law. And the citizen has no obligation to obey, and the state has no power to enforce it. That's what,
yeah,
the
but
Supreme
they
Court
do
does.
Enforce it. I mean, the Constitution doesn't mention the right to breathe or eat either. You know, but that doesn't mean, you know, that they're not affecting that what we're eating. You know, it's, and if you want to make it like even cannabis being outlawed, you remember Larry Flint, right? Larry Flint actually went to, fought our freedom of speech rights based on an article that he wrote as a satire. About Jerry Falwell, and we all saw the People versus Flint, okay? But in the very end, he had to go all the way to the Supreme Court and fight it. Mm-hmm. Granted, he won, okay? And, you know, he had a great lawyer, and it upheld the Second Amendment, or even many things. Like, George Carlin, by the way. I mean, there are people that have fought for their to maintain,
exactly,
what is theirs. But that doesn't mean that the people that you're instructing right now is not going to get some shit for doing it.
Well, you know, the thing about this country and the thing about the Constitution is that people like Larry Flint and people, you know, forerunners like that, they believe that the Constitution was something that they embodied, and they fought and asserted their rights, and they changed things. And so with cannabis use, the thing is the Constitution allows me to use it, and I don't really give a crap what state legislatures come along and write. I'm going to obey the supreme law of the land and the, you know, my creator. I'm going to partake of cannabis, and I expect that whenever I claim those rights, I am going to get some resistance. But that's what freedom is. That's what the Constitution is. That's what the Bill of Rights is. And so I'm going to fight for my personal rights, and I'm going to use their legal framework that they existed to kind of have an affirmative defense, because an affirmative defense is way better than no defense. But, ultimately, that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to fight for the Constitution and for the Bill of Rights and for my rights to use cannabis. If it's a little easier and gives more ammunition in my gun to have a legal defense team and be a part of a medical cannabis collective that will come to my defense, that makes me sleep a lot easier at night. But even if that structure wasn't there, I personally, as an individual, would represent myself and assert my rights, willing to accept the fact that whenever you have a government that has man in it, it's going to be corrupt. There's going to be some things that happen. And, you know, I know people personally who are serving 10-year sentences in prison and they haven't violated anybody else's rights. The government was wrong. That's going to happen. But, you know, that's a part of freedom. That's what this experiment of America is all about, is, you know, you're either going to shrink in the face of adversity and the threat of the state and be a sheep, or you're going to say, you know what, come what may, man, let the chips fall where they may. I know what my rights are. I know they come from a creator. They're not given to me by a contract or a piece of paper or legislatures who've never met me. I will walk these rights. I will assert these rights. And so for me, you know, it's not a big deal for me with cannabis because, you know, I know what my rights are, and I will assert my rights in open court of law, even if it means going to prison. I mean, look, they got the guns. They got the cages. But they're never going to take away my dignity. They're never going to take away, you know, my obedience to my higher power. And they could write all the laws they want to. So the question of does cannabis use on an individual level for medicinal purposes, it's going to come down to, I don't know, the individual and how passionate they believe in their rights. I mean, if you want to wait around for every state legislature to go ahead and make it, you know, to write a very specific law that says you can use it, if you're going to wait for that, okay, I'll, you know, that's going to be a minute, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not asking the government for permission. I'm not going to ask the government for permission. You know, as far as, you know, I'm concerned, I'm not doing anything wrong. The stigma that cannabis is some type of a drug or anything like that is just, to me, it's abnormal. When I come across people like that, I look at them like fossils. Like, you really believe that? You know, but here's the deal. Me personally, I suffer from a post-traumatic stress disorder, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I can tell you that my quality of life with cannabis use is way above what it ever was without cannabis use. And so the state, they're not really going to take that away from me. Now, with CannaSense, I found a collective of people who are like-minded and who want to make a difference in this country, you know. And so they are joining this program with to be a part of this collective so that you can, you know, there's strength in numbers. And that's what cannabis collectives are, is strength in numbers. So that's why I'm out promoting it, because not everyone knows the laws and current events like you and me would.
Right.
But this is a legal defense for them, for those other people, and, you know, and us too. But it's for them too, so that, you know, like I said, I sponsor people every day, and yeah, there are some people who just use it to get high recreationally. I don't really have a problem with that, but this is medical cannabis. So I get messages every single day from people who have children with autism, people who are fighting cancer, fighting depression, bipolar, anxiety, PTSD. I get messages from those people, and they message me every day thanking me, telling me I'm doing God's work, that they were able to get access to their medicine, clean cannabis that helps them with their suffering, makes them better people. Those are the people that I'm trying to give this message to, so that their lives can be enriched. As far as shipping across state lines, the way that CannaSense does it, and they ship across state lines, they ship all around the world. I get my medicine in the mail. I know that the government needs a warrant to search the mail, and if they search it, they'll find medical cannabis, and they'll find a medical patient at the address. The way that they're able to ship across state lines is the United Nations Single Act or Single Treaty Act. Because of when you can join that with the Compassionate Use Act of cannabis, you know, being taken off the Schedule One and being brought into a medicine, they're able to do that, and they ship every day. So, and they've yet to get raided, and I'm not saying that never will happen. I mean, 1984 could be a prophecy. Brave New World could be a prophecy. The government's got the guns; they can make it illegal to, you know, put up memes on Facebook and raid you. You know, they can do whatever they want to do. Really, until then, I'm just going to assume that people who are collecting paychecks from the state are decent human beings that can read laws and can read the Constitution and go, okay, you know, no big deal. We got it. You got your bases covered. We think the laws are stupid, too. We really don't want to waste manpower arresting you when there's murderers and rapists around. You know, not everybody in government is a bad person. There's a lot of good people. They're just, their hands are tied. They're waiting for people like us who aren't on government dole to normalize things and make their jobs easier. You know, there's a lot of good people in government. I'm not one of these people who, you know, who thinks everybody in the government, everybody in FEMA is evil. I know a lot of good people in FEMA. I know people,
really?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Who are absolute angels who got into that job, who believe firmly. They say, look, we understand, we know, but you got to change it. You got to change something from the inside. And they say, you know, we face a lot of shit in these mechanisms, and we understand. But there are a lot of good people in government. You know, I'm a known activist here in Georgia. The governor actually put me on a, you know, the DHS list and all that for asking a question. So I'm very well known by law enforcement. And there's, you know, I get arrested for stuff like being in a public park, you know, after curfew. And I go to jail a lot, and I get a lot of cops who make it hard for me. But you know what? When I'm in jail, I also get about 50% fist bumps and police officers, you know, leaning into me saying, keep it up, Daniel, keep it up. So, you know, that's the approach we have to have. Just because they're behind a badge doesn't mean they're less human. They got families too, man. We got to help them. And I'm telling you, being antagonistic towards people in government like that all the time doesn't make it easier. It makes it harder for us. And you know, that's just the truth. I know it's easy to say, all the people in the government are evil. No, government is just it's a non-conscious, imaginatory structure. It's human beings inside of those machines, man. We have to start looking at human beings and communicating to human beings and not looking at people who get government, you know, who work for the government in any capacity as just pure evil is the same problem that we accuse them of, looking at us like we're cattle. You know what I'm saying? Einstein said you
right.
can't.
Right. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Einstein said you can't solve a problem with the same, you know, the same frequency that created it. You got to come up with. You got to raise your consciousness to solve a problem. You know, there's a lot of good people in government. And we have to start reaching those people and helping them. You know, go to your city hall when the cameras are on. And, you know, like for me, I fully intend to go to my city hall when the cameras are there live and talk about CannaSense when they open the floor up to the public to speak. Because now it's
But Daniel,
topic.
Let me, can I'd like to interject like right here because we are getting towards the end of the show. I think it's great that your probation officer recognized all the steps that you're taking. It looks like there are people that are in Georgia that are looking for answers, and they're trying to find ways of doing it. My thought is that each person that is putting these, you know, laws to the test, you know, are really in some ways, you know, kind of heroes, because you are also still putting yourself at risk that if they want to, they can come after you. And I do agree with you. I do, you know, I started another show talking that there's, you know, there's good and bad in everything, and they're all working together for, you know, a better way. And so, you know, I think it's great that your community is going. Where can people find you at? Where's CannaSense? Is it CannaSense.com?
You can go there, or you can go to downloadedcontent.com. That's my website. You'll see a page there dedicated to it.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much for being on the Freedom of Joy show and sharing your knowledge and information with us. We greatly appreciate it. Until tomorrow, take care and good night.
Download content podcast. Download content.